And ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
Friday edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. We are broadcasting live from Northwest Pennsylvania. We broadcast live each and every weekday, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time on Global Star Radio Network. You can also watch us live on YouTube. We also simulcast on Blog Talk Radio. I'm Joe Hagman, the co-host, along with my father, Doug Hagman, and we have a fantastic show for you tonight. Folks, if you don't know where to find us on the internet, bookmark our websites, HagmanandHagman.com, as well as HagmanReport.com. HagmanandHagman.com is our show site, where HagmanReport.com is for the latest news and information that is important in this world we live in that continues to go along the crazy side. We have a great show lined up for you tonight. Hour one, James Wesley Rawls will be our guest from survivalblog.com. James Rawls is an American author best known for his survivalist genre, Patriots novel series. Rawls is a former U.S. Army intelligence officer. Then in hours two and three, the founder of Oath Keepers, Stuart Rhodes, will be our guest. And we got a lot to get into with Stuart.
You know, I got to tell you, thanks for coming for me. You know, remember those old television commercials with O.J. Simpson jumping over the luggage and turnstiles at airports when he wasn't the killer? Remember that?
No, but I'm young.
Right. Anyway, yeah, that was my pace from the office to the studio. At any rate, thanks for bringing us in. I had I had a very, 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 very good conversation with Oath Keepers founder Stuart Rhodes. Folks, the two guests we have on tonight, James Wesley Rawls, Survival Blog. Pay attention, please, please, please pay attention. And Stuart Rhodes, founder of oathkeepers.org. There's heaviness in my heart tonight. And that's all I'm going to say. I have a very heavy heart.
Okay.
Things aren't right. Go ahead.
Things are definitely, in turmoil, not only here domestically, but internationally, and both geopolitically and economically. And we're continuing to see this divide among citizens here in our country after the Donald Trump victory in the election of 2016, as protesters and violence is intensifying and continues in a number of major cities. And just a real, you have an emotional breakdown of the left, if you will. And there's a lot of interesting and humorous clips on YouTube and other outlets that show this breakdown. Well, let's get to our guest. Survivalblog.com.
Excellent blog.
The daily web blog for prepared individuals.
Excellent
survival blog. Author and former Army intelligence officer James Wesley Rawls is our guest, and he is with us. Mr. Rawls, welcome to the Hagman and Hagman Report.
Thanks for having me on, gentlemen.
Oh, it's our pleasure. I suspect you're going to have a world of just tremendous rib-tickling news, right? Your assessment of things, I guess, it's going to be good, right? Tell us a story. No, I'm kidding around. How are you feeling about things, sir? I got to ask.
Well, I have kind of mixed feelings about the current events. I don't think that Donald Trump was a perfect candidate, but the alternative was absolutely horrifying. To think that Hillary Clinton could have gotten in and could have packed the Supreme Court would pretty well put the last nail in the coffin of American liberty. And I was pleased to see that she was not elected, and now I'm just praying fervently that Donald Trump surrounds himself with freedom-loving, God-fearing men who are strict constructionists on the Constitution, and that both his federal court appointments and, of course, Supreme Court appointments would reflect that.
I totally agree with you. However, I mean, well, there's no however there. I guess what I'm looking at here, what I've been hearing, and I've been hearing this all day from different sources, that the Marxist left, the communists that have infiltrated into our government, have big plans between now and Inauguration Day. I mean, you know, now I'm trying to temper the information that I've gotten with reality. And I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, I'm trying not to be hyperbolic or, you know, use hyperbole, but I do believe that we face some pretty formidable threats despite the mandate that put Donald Trump in office. Without respect to Trump as Trump the man, but the movement. But I don't believe these Marxist Leninist communists in our government are going to cede power willingly. I mean, they're wounded, they're cornered, they got a death grip on power, and I just feel that we are still as a nation in danger. And that's kind of where I'm at today.
Well, I have to agree with you that there'll be resistance. My fear is that beyond that, regardless of the protests that are made or even calls for a recount or perhaps trying to force some electoral college delegates into changing their votes, beyond that, I think the greatest fear that I have is that the powers that be, who had anointed Hillary Clinton as the next president, didn't get their way, and because of that, they are probably willing to see our entire economy crash rather than see Donald Trump institute his planned policies of scaling back government. The powers that be are absolutely addicted to power and to big government, and they don't want to give it up. And like I say, they would actually prefer to crash the system to ensure that Trump doesn't have the opportunity to scale back the government, rather than simply, you know, quietly giving up power.
Yeah, and we've had economists come on the show and lay out scenarios just the few past weeks that said if Trump wins, it's a very real possibility that they will do something to tank the economy, to put Trump off on a very rocky start, and that...
Yes,
you know,
all it would take is a change in interest rates, and that could be manipulated very easily. We've gone from zero interest rate policy to negative interest rate policy. Rates are artificially low right now, and all it would take is them allowing rates to rise to more natural levels, say 4 or 5% interest rates and for the core rate. And at that point, it would be very difficult for our government to even service the national debt. And a rise in interest rates, of course, would absolutely tank the stock market, and it would throw the whole value of the U.S. dollar into question. We could very well see a repudiation of the dollar in international trade, and the dollar could take an absolute drubbing on the Forex.
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right. And we also have a period of time here as Donald Trump is the president-elect until Obama leaves office, which is January 20th, and Trump will then be inaugurated. From your research and anything that you've been hearing, is there anything to indicate that Obama will make some kind of bold moves or attempts to change things?
Nothing concrete. You know, I've heard people talk and say that perhaps he might stage some massive event that would forestall seating the new president, but I don't think that would fly, not with the mood in the United States right now. Even if they were to try to institute martial law in the aftermath of some huge crisis, some terrorist attack, or some staged Reichstag fire type event, I don't think it's going to fly. But I do think, as I mentioned before, that there very well could be an attempt to crash the economy shortly after Trump takes office, and it would all be blamed on him, just like they're blaming Brexit for the economic turmoil and the decline of the British pound right now. I think we'll see something analogous, at least.
Yes, and we know the conditions are ripe. Many economists say that the conditions are much worse than they were before the crash of 08, when we saw the housing market bubble burst, as well as a number of other things that made the administration take emergency measures and getting into TARP. You know, that was a big political I don't even know what
cluster,
you call it. Yes,
well,
that's
cluster,
exactly
and
what
you,
I was thinking.
You finish it, you know.
And so, you know, with the volatility and the level of uncertainty in this country, you run a survival blog, folks, and we're talking with James Wesley Rawls of survivalblog.com.
Yeah, and if I can just say this, Mr. Rawls, your website, and folks, for listeners out there, Joe and I, we each have different websites we go to for news, right? I mean, in the morning, you're a late night guy, I'm an early morning guy. I gotta tell you, both of us have survivalblog.com bookmarked on our computers, as does all of our staff. We check your website daily, filled with vital information. And, I just wanted to interject.
Well, thank you.
That.
I appreciate that.
Well, you know,
I encourage your listeners to take full advantage of the resources that I have on my site. It's all available free, the entire archives that date back now 11 years. And there's thousands of articles and column items and letters that detail family preparedness steps. And I think those steps are going to be very, very important in the near future, especially if there is a staged collapse of the U.S. economy. And yes, I think we have a window of opportunity here for a month or two where families can play catch-up and get their beans, bullets, and Band-Aids squared away before things do fall apart. It's important that people hedge out of U.S. dollars, get out of their dollar-denominated investments, and hedge into silver, hedge into common caliber ammunition, and perhaps a bit into Swiss francs. If the dollar does what I think it's going to do on the Forex, the greatest gain will be if you parlay your dollars into Swiss francs right now.
Okay. A couple of fake passports and Swiss francs in your vault wouldn't hurt any. I'm joking about that, but no, what you're saying about the about parlaying into Swiss francs is really an interesting concept. Now, you know what? Allow me to ask the most basic question. How do you do that? What do you do? Just, if you had, for example, $5,000 in your hand, you could just go to the bank.
Yeah,
and say,
well, the easiest way is say someone who's listening to this show runs a home-based business, and they run a contracting business, and they take some of their payments by PayPal. A lot of those people are going to have a positive balance at any given time. There's an option in PayPal where if you just click on currencies and then add the Swiss franc as a currency on your account, then you simply do a balance transfer. It's basically moving money from one pocket to another. It's still your money, but you're redenominating it into Swiss francs.
Wow.
And right now you can parlay Swiss francs or dollars into Swiss francs at the rate of around $1.03 per Swiss franc. When I started buying Swiss francs years ago, they cost 78 cents. Swiss franc has gone up considerably, especially with the recent turmoil in the euro. But I think this is just really the beginning. I think that in the long term, it'll probably take $1.50 to buy a Swiss franc. And that may be as little as 2 years. So you can do it through PayPal. You can also go to the to a currency desk at any international terminal of any major airport and buy Swiss francs. Or you can buy Swiss franc denominated traveler's checks through any bank. If you give them enough time, they can order them in for you.
Okay. Wow. The PayPal, I'm going through puberty here. The PayPal aspect, I never thought of that, but obviously, you know, commerce, positive
PayPal.
Yeah,
something
balance
that your listeners can do in as little as 1 minute. All they have to do at the end of this show, if they're sitting on a positive PayPal balance, figure out what they can spare, because obviously you don't want to use that money for regular expenses, because it would have to be turned back into U.S. dollars, and you're going to pay for that transaction as well. But if you're sitting on some extra money in PayPal that you're not going to need in the immediate future, I would recommend that you just select Swiss francs as your secondary currency and go ahead and do a conversion. It's something you can do in less than a minute.
Interesting. Wow, you are filled with great advice. And by the way, folks, Mr. Rawls is an accomplished author.
Yeah, I was just going to say I'd like to switch gears here, if we could, and talk about some of your books. I believe that your latest book, if I'm correct here, is oh goodness, where is it?
Survive the End of the World as I Know It,
Survival and the
Well,
collapse.
Actually, I've got several nonfiction books and six different novels now. My latest novel is called Land of Promise, and that's the first novel in my new Counter-Caliphate Chronicle series. But I do encourage people to read my books, but it's really secondary to the more important message, which is get on Survival Blog and take a look at family preparedness articles there and put those articles into action. It's really time to get up out of your armchair, folks, and get prepared. You really need to have an honest 3 or 4 month supply of food as a very minimum on hand for your family. You need to have weapons, the training to go with those weapons, communications equipment, first aid gear, the training to go with that gear, and so forth. So my purpose for doing radio interviews is not to sell books. I'm tickled when people buy them, and it provides some great feedback, but my main purpose for being here talking with your listeners right now is to wake them up and get them prepared. It is really time to stock up and team up and train up, because time is short.
I like that. Stock up, team up, and train up.
Time is very short. James, where do you want to go from here? Do you want to get into practical survival techniques?
Sure.
And practices?
I prefer to do that, in fact, because at this point, trying to have any further conjecture on current events is really, you know, grasping at straws, because so much of it is outside of our control as individuals. I'm not saying we're at the mercy of our environment, but we do need to be proactive about being able to survive whatever comes our way. And it's really important, again, you know, beans, bullets, and Band-Aids for families to get squared away logistically, to team up with their neighbors, and to make contingency plans, because we're going to very rapidly go from a deflationary environment to a massive inflationary environment. In fact, we might even see simultaneous inflation and deflation in the months to come, where we're going to see mass inflation of the currency, but at the same time, some asset classes like technology stocks and asset classes like residential real estate and commercial real estate might continue to go down in value. And that kind of economic environment is really unprecedented. and it's really going to throw a lot of people for a loop. They really won't know how to cope. And it's only the people who have hedged into tangibles and into precious metals who are really going to be able to survive and thrive.
Okay. We have about 5 minutes before the break, and if we can, I like to do this with people who specialize in your area of expertise, survivalism. Say we're talking with people out there who have had and taken no preparation for any possible calamity, whether it's a natural disaster or some kind of nationwide issue that stops the chain of supply and demand. People won't be able to go to the grocery stores, their bank, say there's a bank run. Where would a family start or a person start? We hear water first.
Yeah, water
food
is probably number one on the list, but the key item there is water filtration, because you can usually find water from open sources, but making sure that water is drinkable and not going to make you sick is crucial. So every family should have a good quality water filter, and in fact two. A compact filter like a Katahdin combi filter is a good one. And then for your kitchen, you should have a large gravity filter like a Big Berkey or a Big Berkey clone. And in my blog, again, it's survivalblog.com, I actually have instructions on how to build your own Berkey clone using 5 gallon plastic buckets and commercially available off the shelf ceramic filter elements. And instead of costing you $300 or $400, you can do the whole thing for less than $100.
Okay.
So water filtration is crucial. And then beyond that, people need to think in terms of the staple foods that they already use on a regular basis. Things like pasta and rice and beans and flour, that sort of thing. You need to stock up on that in quantity. Get a hold of vermin-proof containers, and there you need to have food-grade 5 or 6 gallon plastic buckets. Those are often available free at your local bakery or the bakery department of your grocery store. You might want to ask, do you have any 5 gallon buckets available? And they'll probably say, oh, sure, let me go grab a couple for you. Or they'll either be free or just a dollar or two. You could also order them through any of the major vendors that do food storage. And you don't have to buy commercially packaged foods. The per calorie unit price on those is fairly high compared to buying bulk foods and packaging it yourself. And again, at my blog, I describe several different methods, including a dry ice method and a method with oxygen absorbing packets, of how people can store their own food safely, again, in vermin-proof containers and in a way where you won't open the buckets 2 or 3 years later and find them full of weevils.
I've got to make a confession. It was because of survivalblog.com that through the advice of James Rawls that I actually made my first purchase of the food grade white buckets with, you know, those, and I'm trying to remember the, I bought two of them. Boy, am I prepared, right?
Gamma seal lids?
Those things, yes. Yes.
Is the lid I prefer. It's called a gamma seal lid. It's a what they call a spinner lid, where it's threaded and it has an O-ring seal, and it's designed to be repeatedly removed and resealed. And certainly much easier than using a lid wrench to pry lids off of 5 gallon buckets. And again, gamma seal lids are available from a number of different mail order vendors, including some advertisers on my site. Or you can even find them through eBay. Just again, it's gamma, G-A-M-M-A, seal lids.
That's right. And I'm amazed. And I guess I was going to wait until later to talk about what you said about the thousands of articles instructional articles on your website free of charge. You know, many people come to us and say, well, you know, I can't afford to buy books and, point me in the direction. And your website has the information right there. And I'm just.
Yeah, in fact, I have a special page for newbies. If they look in the left-hand bar at survivalblog.com, there's a link titled Getting Started, and that's a page that's designed specifically for people who are just getting started at preparedness for their family. I would recommend that as a starting point.
And yeah, you've done this. What a wonderful... In fact, I just clicked on that, and the wealth of information that's there. Because we do have a lot of people who listen to us who are just coming on board, new listeners. And frankly, we have a lot of people who listen to us that are listening from mobile homes or apartments, small spaces, whatever the case might be, are infirmed, and a number of people who are alone that have no support whatsoever family-wise.
Yeah.
So this brings a lot to me. This brings a lot of hope and a lot of instruction, a lot of inspiration to those people.
Well, yes, even someone who's on a modest budget, say a college student or a retiree, can make some very substantive steps to get squared away. And within just a few days of preparing, and again, on a very modest budget, you're going to be head and shoulders above most of your neighbors, because the average American family only has about a 3-day supply of food on hand.
James,
and that's kind of a frightening statistic.
We're up against our break, and we'll pick up right where we left off here. The average American has only 3 days worth of food. And can you imagine,
sadly,
if everything goes dark and there was no ability to get any resources, what the world would look like, or the country would look like, in
or your
day
house
five.
Would look like.
We'll be right back with James Wesley Rawls right after these short messages. Stay with us. This fantastic Friday edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. James Wesley Rawls is our guest until the end of this hour. Survivalblog.com is his website. We're going to get back to him in just a second. But first, we have an announcement. We want to thank all of the veterans out there, all the sacrifices that they have made over the years, them and their families. And our sponsor, American Survival Wholesale, has a special Veterans Day pack. Folks, go to AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com and check out their 2016 Veterans Day pack. It's a Veterans Day food special, limited time offer, which has a layaway plan available, 90-day layaway plan, $100 down. The whole price for this pack is $369. And you will save over 50% on a great assortment of some of your favorite meals. You'll receive over 2 months of meals for one person, including chocolate milk, angel hair noodles, real cheddar potatoes, creamy southern style mashed potatoes, savory black beans and rice, chicken vegetable stew, tender elbow pasta, creamy cinnamon and rice pudding, a total of 740 servings for only $369. Again, there's a 90-day layaway plan available with $100 down and the remainder $269 due in 90 days. You can email Chance at bugoutamerica@usa.com or give him a call, 818-720-0759. We want to thank American Survival Wholesale for the way that they treat our audience and what they do for the veterans out there. And again, a very gracious thank you to all the veterans out there. American Survival Wholesale's Veterans Day food special. Go to AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com for more details on that. We're going to get back to our guest, Mr. James Wesley Rawls of SurvivalBlog.com. Before the break, you were talking about how most American families have only 3 days' worth of food in their homes.
Yes, that's right. And it really is frightening to think that with that level of preparedness, how quickly people will revert to lawlessness once their food is expended or once they don't have a reliable source of drinking water. I think large numbers of people are going to end up as refugees, and a certain percentage of those, and at this point unknown percentage of those people, are going to end up preying on others. So it's important that people also be squared away in terms of self-defense. I'm a big believer in the Second Amendment, and I do think that getting firearms in common calibers is probably your best bet, and stocking up plenty of ammunition, because that ammunition is also going to end up being a very valuable barter item.
I think the
calibers to concentrate on for most Americans would be things like, for pistols, 9mm, 357 Magnum, 40 Smith & Wesson, and 45 automatic. For rifles, 223, 308, and perhaps some either 7.62x39 or 5.45x39 for the AK-47 and the AK-74 would be ideal. As a all-around caliber, there's nothing beats 22 long rifle in quantity, and perhaps lay away set aside some 22 Magnum. And for shotguns, stick with just standard 12 gauge and 20 gauge, and you'll want plenty of birdshot and a decent supply of buckshot and slugs.
And I'm not being facetious when I ask this question, but how much ammunition is enough?
For me, my minimum comfort level would be 1,000 rounds for every handgun and 1,500 rounds for every rifle. Every battle rifle, at least. For hunting rifles, probably as little as 200 or 300 rounds for scoped bolt action. Those would be the minimums. But again, if you end up stocking too much ammunition, there really can never be too much, because the common caliber ammunition is going to be more desirable than gold in the short term.
Interesting. And I do believe that. Now, let's get back to your pantry three-day food remark. I'm going to ask you this. We often talk about long-term storable food, but in your pantry, in the Rawls home pantry, or someone similar like yourself, 6 months worth of food before you have to tap into, we'll say, the long-term storable food? Do you think, or 3 months?
Well, I would say you want to have at least 3 months of just regular staple foods on hand as a bare minimum. But beyond that, you should probably stock up in bulk on additional staple foods and things like hard red winter wheat. You'll need a wheat grinder to go with that, so you can grind your own flour. Pasta, rice, beans, sugar, honey in quantity. Most of those store very long term, with the exception of beans. Beans tend to get too hard after 8 or 10 years of storage. They can only be cooked with a pressure cooker after they've been in storage that long, if you're buying dried beans.
Sure.
But beyond that, it's important that families stock up multivitamins in quantity, and I think it is also wise to have a smaller quantity of very compact, complete meals like MREs or the commercial equivalent to MREs on hand as kind of a bug-out bag type supplies. And to ensure nutritional adequacy in the very long term, if you have a good budget, you should also be buying some freeze-dried foods, things like Mountain House freeze-dried entrees. Those are usually packed in what's called a number 10 can, which is about a gallon in size, and those are designed for storage for up to 30 years. Again, the cost per meal is a little bit higher for those, but you don't want to get into a situation where you have children in particular, or people who have particularly dietary problems who simply lose interest in eating. If all they're eating is just wheat, rice, and beans, meal after meal after meal, you could actually see some people losing weight if they're on a limited diet like that. So you want to have some variety in your diet, and freeze-dried entrees like the Mountain House Foods or some of the equivalents from other companies, I think are a wise thing to buy.
James, when we're talking about water, we had a guest on last week who told us about a system that he had of collecting rainwater. And if we could get into this a little bit, what would you recommend as the best way? You know, average family lives in the city, you know, houses kind of close together, have their own house and garage, and have room for, you know, the ability to dig up the ground a little bit and store tanks for water underneath the ground. What would you say?
Storing water for an extended period of time is really not practical for most people, because it would really require installing some really large cisterns to make that work. What I recommend people do is that they set up their roofs, if they already have a metal roof, that they set up rain gutters and set up downspout converters. You can buy those mail order, so that you can, during each rainstorm, you can kind of have a bypass valve where you flush the downspout system at first, and then you turn the bypass valve, and then you're going to fill rain barrels. And then, of course, you want to treat that water through a good quality filter, and also keep plain old Clorox bleach on hand. Just plain hypochlorite bleach is the stuff to use.
Okay. And, you know, we've heard and know as standard practice that each person should have, I think it's 2 gallons of clean water per person per day. What would you say is the recommended
and that's
amount?
That's just for drinking and cooking. If you're going to also have extra water on hand for toilet flushing,
yes,
and for showering, you'll need much more than 2 gallons per day. But 2 gallons is the bare minimum that you'll need on hand. And again, you'll need to have a good quality water filter for your family to ensure that the water that you're going to use to drink and to cook with is going to be safe to use.
Okay. Some tips that you might be able to share with our audience that they might be unfamiliar with, or we might be unfamiliar with. Simple little tips on how to make surviving, you know, be as effective as you can while surviving, whether that's from gathering water
go ahead.
I would say that your typical listener probably lives in the suburbs rather than in the country, and I think the important thing to look ahead to is disruption of the power grid. And so you need to think through where you're going to get water, how you're going to transport that water. Typically, what I recommend is that people get a garden cart and some 5-gallon plastic water cans, like the military surplus ones. They're typically either black or tan color, and you can buy those at military surplus stores. You need to think ahead in terms of where you're going to find water, how you're going to transport it, and then even security for the team that's going to be going to transport that water. You don't want to get bushwhacked while you're just out collecting water. And you need to be able to hunker down in your house for an extended period of time. You'll need to have some storage foods that don't require cooking, or where you can cook them with a low signature, where you're only going to use, say, a propane stove. So you're not going to have a huge fire in your backyard. You don't want to be attracting attention. And also think in terms of having a really good quality sleeping bag for every member of the family. Because if the power grid is down, you're probably going to be in a situation where you're not going to be able to heat your house. And if things fall apart in wintertime, you need to have a a expedition-style sleeping bag. The brand I recommend is made by a company called Wiggys, W-I-G-G-Y-S. They're out of Grand Junction, Colorado. And they make a sleeping bag system. It actually has two sleeping bags, one inside the other. And with both bags together, they're rated for 0 degrees. So you can be warm and toasty even if your house is only 30 or 40 degrees.
Wow. How do you feel about whole house generators, the kind that run off of natural gas for people living in the suburbs or city? Okay, go ahead.
If you're living in a situation where your neighbors will also have generators, they're probably recommended. But if you're the only person in a neighborhood that has a generator, you're going to end up being running a great big come loot me beacon.
Gotcha.
You don't want to be someone who sticks out as unusual. If you look like you're better prepared than your neighbors, you're going to make yourself a target if you're in a typical urban or suburban environment. If you're out in the country where everybody has a generator, it's fine. Otherwise, I would recommend a silent generator, a photovoltaics for your house, rather than a propane or natural gas fired generator or a diesel fired generator.
Yeah.
And I definitely don't recommend gasoline engine generators because of the short storage life of gasoline and also the higher flammability.
Right. Yeah, and yeah, I lived in one place where a neighbor had a gas generator, which that was a problem storing the gas. I mean, you lose what, like an octane a month or something, or octane. Is that right? Whatever it is. I mean, it's certainly not a long-term storable commodity.
No, it's not. And you're going to go through a tremendous amount of gasoline very quickly. And it's in most suburban environments, unless you have an underground tank, it really isn't safe to have 20 or 35-gallon gasoline cans sitting there. It's a explosion risk, especially if there are bullets flying around. So natural gas, where it's piped in from a civic supply, or propane, where you have a above-ground propane tank or an underground propane tank, is ideal. If it's above ground, you should probably build a cinder block wall around that tank to give it a little bit of ballistic protection and keep it out of sight. I also recommend that if you have a propane tank, that when you have it installed, you ask the company to also supply what's called a wet leg. And a wet leg is a device that attaches to the valve assembly of the tank that allows you to fill smaller propane tanks from a large propane tank. Now, like your typical backyard barbecue tanks are a 20-pound cylinder. If you have a wet leg for your main propane tank, you can fill smaller tanks, and that will give you great versatility in terms of having portable propane or giving you the ability to barter some of your propane.
Okay. Let's switch gears, if we can, to what we see in America, and we've seen over the course of our recent history, is small mom-and-pop stores being run out of business by companies like Walmart and other big business corporations. What can people do to bridge the gap between their local farmers and themselves? I mean, I know there's farmers markets, you have, different food stands, but what can people do, A, on their own, to be more proactive in gardening and using the space they have to grow their own food?
Well, it's important that people have their own gardens and that they put as much of their backyard into production as possible, even if it means ripping out a lawn. Go ahead and get started in gardening. It takes a lot of practice. It takes time to learn what varieties of garden seeds do well in particular climate zones. There's a learning curve, and you definitely want to master that learning curve now when you're in a situation where if you have a crop failure, you could basically laugh at yourself and say, oh, well, boy, I really messed that one up. If you wait until after everything hits the fan and you have a crop failure, you're starving. So you need to, again, master that learning curve now rather than later.
What
I think it's very important that people get involved with their local farmers market and don't just attend the market and buy things there, but get to know the farmers themselves. Find out where they're located, if they're in reasonable driving distance to you. Develop personal relationships with those farmers so that you'll be on a first name basis with them, because there may come a day when they're hunkered down, they're only going to be willing to do business with people they know they can trust.
Yeah, absolutely right. For people who are planting their own gardens, what would you recommend as things they should plant to maximize their abilities?
Well, I think that root crops like potatoes and turnips are some of the easiest to grow. They have some of the best yields per acre, and they're also fairly foolproof for beginners. A lot of the other crops, a lot of the row crops, have some drawbacks from a preparedness standpoint. If you have row crops of corn, that's something that your neighbors are going to see growing from a distance, and it's going to be a lucrative target for sneak thieves. Or might even make you a target for a home invasion. But low-lying root crops really don't look like much from a distance, not to the untrained eye anyway. So I think crops, again, like potatoes and turnips, I think are some of the best things that people can grow to maximize yield on small acreage.
Got it. Okay. Now, to step back, the studio had, I've gotten a couple of emails here.
And we got
asking this question. Yeah. Yeah. And folks, our guest, James Wesley Rawls, survivalblog.com, just a best selling author, but a noted survivalist. In fact, if you just check his profile on Wikipedia itself, not that, you know, we do that, but, the granddaddy, the founder, the face of the prepper movement, according to Wikipedia. But having said all that, we started out the show kind of in a dark area, but I have to ask, if what you're saying is, if we have an economic collapse, what would you say would be the period of time that we're going to have to, we're going to be in a period of disarray? Abnormal living, cut off from, you know, everything, in your estimation?
Well, Mr. Hagman, I think it all depends on the scenario. If we have a grid-down collapse, we very well might have a collapse that lasts for years and years. If the power grid stays up, we might end up with a situation that's roughly analogous to the Great Depression of the 1930s, which was still incredibly uncomfortable, but the majority of people lived through that. Now, unfortunately, though, we're in a situation where, unlike in the 1930s, where, say, 20 or 30% of the people were actively involved and actively engaged in farming or fishing or ranching, now we have 1% of the population feeding the other 99%. So I think the amount of disruption and the amount of starvation that takes place, even if we have a depression that plays out, a deflationary depression that plays out just like the depression of the 1930s, will be much more traumatic. And we also have a society that has far less respect for personal property, and we also have a society with a huge number of people who are chemically dependent. And those chemically dependent people are going to come unglued if their supply of medications, whether they're prescription medications or whether they're self-medicating with illicit drugs, if those supplies are disrupted, we're going to see a lot of people becoming mentally imbalanced and a great danger to society. So I think it's important that people plan for a worst case that will go on for not just months but years. And I realize that most people are not in a situation to be able to cope with that where they're currently living, so they need to have a bug out plan. And if any of your listeners have country cousins who are living in agricultural areas and hopefully engaged in agriculture, you really need to team up with them immediately, pre-position food, clothing, gardening tools. A good portion of your logistics need to be pre-positioned at that home, and you need to be ready to team up with that other family to help provide mutual security and extra labor, because if they're having to revert to traditional agriculture, if there's a disruption of the power grid and of bulk fuels and bulk fertilizers, they may need a lot of manpower very quickly. So get to know your country cousins.
Well said. Great advice. Survivalblog.com. Mr. Rawls, one final closing question. We know that you've got so many informational pieces, instructional articles at your website, survivalblog.com. If someone has a special needs or set of circumstances, do you provide consulting on an individual basis?
Yes, I do, but I do recommend that people take full advantage of the archives at my blog. Again, they're fully searchable. They date back 11 years, and there is no super secret members only area. The entire archives are available free of charge. I recommend that people do topical searches on food storage and first aid and communications, whatever. And when they find the most important articles, they should print out hard copies of those. And every family should have a set of reference binders, starting with a collection of recipes. You need to have the manuals for all of your tools and equipment, any of your appliances, your generator, your chainsaw, all that equipment. You should have all those manuals put together in one place in a binder. And then you should print out references that you find from the internet at sites like my own at like survivalblog.com. Print out those most important articles and have them in hard copy, because the internet may not be available at some point in the future. If we're in a grid down situation, you'll need hard copy. Now, a lot of the information from the first few years of my blog was put in a digest form in a book called How to Survive the End of the World as We Know It. But again, I'm not here on your show to promote my books, but if people want to get kind of a head start save the time on printing out articles from my blog, they can buy a copy of that book. And used copies, by the way, are often available through Amazon.com. For as little as $2 or $3. So take full advantage of my website. Get the hard copy references, folks. They may save your lives.
My brother, I'll tell you something. You have been a voice of reason, a stable voice here. I love how you deliver the information without overstating or understating what's taking place. Instructional, informational, and inspirational. Survivalblog.com. Folks, James Wesley Rawls, thank you so very much, sir. Thank you. Thank you for coming on board and giving us your gracious gift.
Well, thank you. Thank you, too. And I pray the 91st Psalm for you and all your listeners.
God bless you. Amen. Thank you. Wow, folks, we're going to be right back.
James Wesley Rawls, yeah. Survivalblog.com. When we come back from our break, founder of Oath Keepers, Stuart Rhodes, will be with us from the top of this next hour till the end of the program. Do not go anywhere.